to HoustonStorytellers.org, and the monthly Story Swap Zoom link will be under events. You can also take your skills to the next level by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. And our friends at The Moth meet the second Tuesday of the month, The Warehouse Live. Great place for a date night. Visit our Facebook page at So What's Your Story at Facebook.com. And if you have any ideas for guests, let us know by shooting us an email at sws@kpfd.org. You know, I played other award-winning lies over the years, and incredibly clever is the constant common denominators. And you know, it's just cleverness. That's the common denominator, incredibly clever. And let me just read some of the titles. For example, one of my favorites was by Bernadette Nason, The Tortoise Tossing Contest. I know that, I think, I don't know, Michael, if you heard that one, but it's jaw-dropping. You think, this is so real. But think about it. You don't toss, well, in any event, it's remarkable. It is. Beautiful foliage. Remember? Yeah. That was great, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And then there's the beautiful foliage, you know, the fall leaves and the snowfall and the change of seasons in Amarillo by Sheila Starksville. Watermelon, The Size of a Pickup by Donna Ingham. A collection of ghost stories by Elizabeth Ellis and Laura Nemi begins with a curious element of truth before taking us on a fanciful journey into the unknown. That's what makes it so scary, so convincing. And, you know, I had to mention Rod Serling. Rod Serling, as people who know me know, was my favorite writer, my favorite TV host. It was my favorite show. He examined real phenomena as seeds for the entry into the Twilight Zone. And I just want to give you some examples, because I think that, especially for the boomers out there, we got a lot of boomers who listen, this is going to be remarkably interesting, because there were 11 of his episodes, I'm just going to talk about a couple, that actually predicted the future. One was turns to a computer to find love. And it was in the first season, and it was called Agnes with Love, to Agnes with Love. It was about a guy who turns to a computer to find out if he could find someone to love. Think about that. Is that as traditional or typical as we have now? He's looking to a computer to find someone to love. And then, and this was really one of my favorites, called Static. It was in the second season. It's this guy who finds an old radio, right? And when you turn it on, guess what you hear? You hear old music from the 30s and 40s. I could just stop. And we think, what's so profound about that? Nothing. That's just the point. The notion is that when it was written in 1961, who would have thought that we would be able to do that? Now, there were all radio dramas, you know, from Gunsmoke and stuff, but not music. And then there was one called The Eye of the Beholder, which was about a woman. This was a very popular one, who had plastic surgery because she wanted to look like everyone else. And when the bandages were removed, it turns out she was as beautiful, as attractive as she wanted to be, was to begin with, and everybody else was hideous looking. And I love that whole concept. How often is it that we have got to find a way to be like everyone else? We have a hard time being who we are, defining who we are, the idea of image and impression formation. Then there was one about a man who was obsolete, Burgess Meredith, I remember. He was in several of them. He was a man who was obsolete. He lost his job. And the main reason is because he was told that the facts that he had learned are wrong. There was a guy who kept hounding at him saying, don't you know that people like Hitler and Stalin were real? Their only mistake was that they didn't take things far enough. And of course, he was amazed and astonished at how people could lie about history. And this is one that kind of blows my mind, because in 1962, watching this one, you would think, well, what's wrong with that? My God, that, thank goodness that's real. But unfortunately, it's very real, right? And unfortunately, we have people who just deny the truth. So I share that because I think it makes sort of an interesting point about what these tall tales do and what these lies are. And I don't know, I just find them to be remarkable in so many ways. I know that I mentioned that I had told a story a long time ago, and I'm only going to tell about 3 minutes of it because it's a work in progress anyway. And Michael, I know that you heard this part of the story anyway, but let me just play the same game that we've been playing. The truth is that I was a stutterer in from sixth grade to ninth grade. I was a pretty bad stutterer, as a matter of fact. I also won several teaching awards, what I'm very proud of, and I was also a disc jockey when I was in college at Ohio State. So I start the story by saying, I am an award-winning professor. I don't want to brag, but it's true. I mean, there are very few who, well, truth is, who are better than I am. But you would think that that never would have happened because when I was in junior high, I couldn't raise my hand and say a thing. By the time I'd get it out, it'd be time for summer break, or my friends would be talking to me because I was a stutterer. As you might imagine, I didn't read anything out loud. I didn't date much because who would have waited as for long, so long for me to say, do you want to go out? I couldn't get it out in less than an hour. In any event, I was pretty upset, as you might imagine, and I just knew that this would be a real thorn in my spine. There's no way that I'd be able to produce anything, be successful, have a good social life, or anything. And then finally, I realized that, well, I'm going to have to get some speech therapy, and I did. But in the meantime, no one was going to pay for it. Oh, no, not in my home. So I had to make some money. I had to find a way to pay for my own speech therapy, if you can believe that. And I looked through paper, and I was only 14 years old, so there weren't a whole lot of jobs I could get, you know. But there was one for a Bible salesman. And I thought, I'm not a very religious guy, and I don't even know this particular Bible. But you know what? I need a job because I got to pay for my speech therapy. So I decided to use my resources. I use my liabilities. I use my resources. I'm a clever guy. So I decided I know how I am going to make a lot of money selling door-to-door Bibles. I'd ring that bell, and when the young lady or young gentleman would come to the door, I'd say, "Ma'am, this Bible is 3,261 pages. You want me to read it, or you want to buy it?" And of course, I sold a hell of a lot of them, as you might imagine. Now, you may think that's crazy, but I just see that as really using my resources as creatively as possible. Okay, I'll just stop there, but you get the idea. And again, I love us talking about this because it shows that all of us are really capable, right, of crafting marvelous tall tales, which are a lot of fun, but also do important things. Like they're funny, they're humorous, but they do have a serious topspin to them. And I think that's really important to know. In her book, Story Catcher, Making Sense of Our Lives Through the Power and Practice of Story, Christina Baldwin contends that every storyteller has the license to amplify. And I kind of think of it as a speaker system. We know that the cricket didn't jump up to the moon, but maybe the cricket jumped up to the top of the tree. We didn't see the cricket, so we imagine the cricket jumped up to the moon. When we break up with somebody, the hurt's a little deeper, the kiss is a little longer. We exaggerate things oftentimes to make a point. And Baldwin's book was published before the film Big Fish. You gentlemen probably seen that movie or know it. Great, great movie about storytelling. And I found that insight to be very eerie because it came before the movie was made, and the movie centers on Edward, an affable man whose stock in trade is the tall tale. It was Walter Finney. However, although a tad amplified, his stories turn out to be as tall as they first appear, not as tall. Well, Edward is dying, and his son Will was sitting in his father's hospital room. And Edward presses his son to retell the story that he told his son when his son was a young boy about how he was going to die. As a youngster, Edward claimed that he and his friends learned how they were going to die by glaring into the glass eye of one of the most feared witches in Alabama. To appease his father, Will reluctantly agrees to tell the story, and as he begins to narrate it, Will gradually responds to his own telling with a blend of a heart-rending spirit and gentle laughter, as if he heard the story for the first time. The definition of Edward's life peaked when Will recounts the part of the story when he and his father reached the river. To paraphrase, he says, "I gently carry you from the car to the riverbank, and you wave to the cheers of your loving friends who have congregated there to convey their final farewells to the man they love so dearly. Everyone, and I mean everyone who was there, was happy. No one looked sad. Then I carry you to the river. I gently place you in the water, and you become what you've always wanted, a big fish." Another film about storytelling I always recommend is Finding Neverland, the story of Peter Pan's creator, James Barry. He used a very real family as his muse to write about the Darlings in Peter Pan. Amplification highlights is what we need to remember always. Apocryphal stories is the last example that I want to use. For those of you out there who don't know, George Washington did not chop down a cherry tree, but he's not a liar. That's just the point. But if he had chopped down a cherry tree, he was the kind of guy to walk up to his father and say, "Pa, I cannot tell a lie. I chopped down this cherry tree with my little hatchet." Because apocryphal stories are about a person's character. They're not meant to be taken literally. It's not a story about chopping down a cherry tree. It's a story about honesty, right? There are a lot of folk tales that we can think of that teach us wonderful, wonderful memories. Now, you guys think about any folk tales that you learned as a kid or heard recently as an adult that teaches you something, even though the story itself seems ludicrous. Anything, Warren, anything comes to mind? You're muted. Yeah, you're muted.
Sorry about that. When I was a kid, you know, we heard all of the basic fairy tales. And as a boy, I was not a big fan. Cinderella was one that, we heard often, and it did not speak to me in any way, shape, or form. When I got much older, my mother began telling me some of the family secrets and about her own childhood. And there were a lot of parallels with the Cinderella story that I only put together even years after that. But a stepmother who was wicked, essentially, or seriously mentally ill, or both. But the Cinderella story is one that I think about all the time now. Wow. And it's a way of trying to understand and empathize with my mother and the things she went through in her childhood.
That's amazing. Wow. We have to talk about that some more. I find that's really fascinating. Michael, what about you? Any story comes to mind?
I'm trying to think of something, but there's so many, but I'm really more focused on my grandfather's stories of the Bell Witch. His family farm was right next to the Bell family farm, and he had so many of those stories, and some of them, you know, were really, really powerful and profound. So it's hard to know, I think, sometimes what truth and fiction are. Was it possible that the witch put rocks in the cake, or was it possible that maybe one of the kids was upset that it wasn't their birthday and put rocks in the cake? Mm-hmm. I guess sometimes to me, the story is just, you know, what is true? What is fiction? Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference.
Right. Well, you know, Bruno Bettelheim in his book, Laws of Enchantment, always talk about, and it's one of my favorite books, really, because he says things like, look at Hansel and Gretel. How many times do two kids get angry with their mothers and run away? And they go into the woods and they see something enticing, like a candy house. And you think to yourself, how many times have you been angry with your mother, ran into the woods and see something enticing? Just those three questions. And the answer is often. And that's a whole story of Hansel and Gretel, for example. Yeah, this is a great topic. This is something that we should actually create a show around, because this is really pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. Well, guys, you know, we're coming to an end as we always do. Thank you, Dr. Warren Holloman and Michael Winters, for lying so well. You can listen to the incredible telling stills and wonderful stories these gentlemen tell on YouTube and our Houston Storyteller site under radio programs on the menu. You know, these stories are pretty magnificent, and I just wanted everybody to know as a reminder that this story is the best representation of community radio in town. Stay where you are for Living Art, another KPFT exclusive with host Michael Woodson. Make Houston's community station 90.1 a part of every day. And be sure to join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story? You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Hank Rubicek, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to remember that even if a story doesn't end happily, you can still live happily ever after. Peace.
The Orange Show for Visionary Arts' 36th Annual Houston Art Car Festival and Parade will take over Houston April the 6th through the 16th, with a big parade happening on Saturday, April 15th. Over 250 mobile masterpieces from across the country will be on display, including nearly 100 new, never-seen-before creations. The parade is free to attend. Arrive early to secure your spot on the parade route and take part in the festivities, including food trucks, entertainment, and a creative kids zone, and so much more. For more information, visit www.thehoustonartcarparade.com.
Y'all come back now to Honest Clyde's. We'll give you a good deal.
Yeah, I got your good deal, Honest Clyde.
Now, honey, be nice.
Well, the guy was lowballing us. This car's worth three times as much as he was offering. Let's get out of here. Turn on the radio.
That was another great song on KPFT. Do you have a car that you don't use and you need it gone? Donate it to KPFT. It's tax deductible, and we can arrange to pick it up. The proceeds from the sale are invested in KPFT, helping keep community radio on the air. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR.
What a great idea! We can get a tax deduction and support KPFT.
It is a great idea. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Okay, that's 1-855-573-8227.
Hi, thanks for listening to KPFT. KPFT has always provided us with music and public affairs we don't hear anywhere else. It's not mainstream, and that's how we like it. Please support community radio and join KPFT. Call 713-526-5738 now and pledge your support. My name is Jane, and I'm a listener member of KPFT Houston.
KPFT has been a staple in the Houston area and surrounding communities for over 50 years. With an amazing volunteer staff, we are able to produce exclusive programming that you cannot hear anywhere else. From every genre to the local current affairs programs, our volunteers give 100% to the communities in which we serve. As KPFT continues to evolve, we ask for your input, and we ask that you support the arts, music, news, international news, and current affairs that you've come to know and love. With your support, we've been able to grow our programming and serve our communities more now than ever before. As time changes, isn't it good to know that you have a community station that does too? If you have not sent in your contribution to KPFT, now is a perfect time to do just that. Go online to kpft.org. Giving could never be easier. Thank you for your support of Houston's community station for over 50 years. 90.1 KPFT and FM HD1, Houston.
Oh, R&R, where are they?
Dad, snap out of it.
I'm calling the doctor.
Dr. Renfro's office.
I need the doctor now.
Okay, hold on, I'll put you through.
Heal a sick, raise a dead.
Dr. Renfro.
Doctor, it's my husband. He's in a trance. He keeps repeating R&R.
We get a lot of that. Go to your radio.
Is that a new treatment?
No, tune your radio to 90.1.
R&R, reassuring and reputable.
Oh, you saved my life. I dropped my radio and it went off. I feel so much better.